Hey there, it's Carly Moore here. This month on Pueblo's podcast, we're highlighting a few of Pueblo's city council members. As we start a new year, we're asking them what their goals are for our city in 2022. Now, we'll chat with a handful of them. Some council members were unable to accommodate our request to interview, but please tune in each Monday this month to hear from different city council members. Thanks so much for listening.
I'm Dave Moore, and this is Pueblo's Podcast. My guest today is Pueblo City Councilman Dennis Flores. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for spending some time with me.
Yeah, hello. Thank you for having me on your program today. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Sure. How long have you been on City Council?
Well, I took a really strange journey. There was a vacancy back in 2014 for a 14-month slot. You actually applied since one of the council members resigned. There was an opening. So I applied for the position and I got it. I think there was quite a few people that applied for it and they interviewed me and they selected me. So that's how I got my feet wet, I guess, with city council duties. Right about the end of my term, and I had promised that I was going to run again during that period. But then, life kind of intervenes and those kinds of decisions. And my wife got very, very ill. And, I became a caregiver after that. I couldn't run from my seat.
Sure.
So I spent a couple of years taking care of my wife. And then she passed away toward the latter part of 2016. And then I had I had a year to think about what I was going to do. And I was just getting bored, and so I ran for my seat. It was November of 2017 and was elected. So I had the 14 months, and then I had a break for 2 years, and then I took my seat in January of 2018 and served 4 years.
Okay.
And then I was lucky enough, I think people liked what I was doing, and I got reelected this past November, and I just got sworn in for my second term, which is another 4 years, in January. So I'm starting my second term, and based on our city charter, we are term limited to serve only 2 4-year terms. So is my last, this is kind of like my last hurrah. People say, well, why did you run? You know, what was your main focus? You know, serving on city council for 4 years, I was kind of in the middle of a lot of stuff that I was doing, and I really wanted to see a lot of the stuff that I had started maybe completed. And I figured I'm retired. You know, I've been retired now, close to 8 years. So I figured I've got the time, and I've always enjoyed being on civic boards and serving the community. So it gave me a great avenue to do that.
Absolutely. Tell our listeners a little bit about your city council career and life in Pueblo.
Yeah. I was really lucky. You know, I grew up in Pueblo, I actually was born in Brighton, Colorado, but then my folks, I think I was just about a year old. This was when they were hiring a lot at the CF&I at the time. And so they moved to Pueblo, and, I was raised here, went to, all the schools here in Pueblo, landed up starting at the old SCSC my freshman year, and spent a year in college. And then I landed up because I needed a job. I had a gentleman that said, you want to come manage a motel in Lahana for me, and I'll pay your tuition at Otero for your second year. So I spent a year at Otero, and then I got drafted, and my whole life changed after that.
Oh, sure.
I got drafted in the military, and as a result of being drafted, I had an opportunity to maybe get a better job, and I enlisted and landed up in the service in the Army Security Agency. So I had a Vietnam tour, and I spent a couple of years in Munich, West Germany, which wasn't too bad. It was a pretty nice place to be for 2 years. When I came back, I started school again, and I was a junior. It was hard to believe in 1967, they didn't care if you were in college. They said, that was, you know, the Vietnam War was 1967. So sure. They just took me, and they didn't care that I was a full-time student because they did away with deferments at that point.
Oh, okay.
I landed up coming back to Pueblo and starting my junior year. And I don't know if you remember a professor. His name is Dr. Ralph Yoder. I remember the name.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was a business professor. And he says, if there's anybody that would be interested in talking to a gentleman named Ray Williams, he's looking for an intern to learn the insurance business. And when he said insurance, I mean, and the bell rang, all those kids just rushed out. They didn't want anything to do with it. And I dropped my books on the floor, you know, those very narrow desks that, you know, barely holds your arm and then it looks right. like a plate. I dropped my books and he came up and he says, God, he says, I'm glad that somebody's going to take advantage of this opportunity. He says, I'm just so happy that you're interested in it. And I was too embarrassed to say no. So I went on an interview and I spent my whole, my whole career was with Steel City Agencies. And then the last 10 years, we sold our business to Hub International. So I spent 42 years working with Ralph. It wasn't Ray Williams. It was Ralph Williams.
Okay.
Who was kind of my mentor. And then Brett Kelly. I don't know if you remember him.
Oh, sure. The Kelly Absolutely. Family.
Yeah. So I spent 42 years as a property and casualty agent. But what was really great about my job is that both Ralph and Brett really felt that you needed to be involved in civic situations in the city to help the community. They always looked at it in an opposite way, that the only reason we existed was the fact that people were doing business with us in the city and that we should give back.
Right.
And so I landed up serving on the District 60 Board of Education for 8 years, and I landed up serving another 8 years in that was back in the 90s. And then in 2011, Governor Hickenlooper appointed me to the Board of Governors, and I served 8 years the CSU. Yeah, I served 8 years for the CSU system, which governed CSU Fort Collins, CSU Pueblo, and CSU Global, which is an internet university. So, you know, I had a lot of experience there. I was very active with the Latino Chamber. In fact, during my term, you know, we grew about 500%. You know, we were able to buy a building. And so I was quite active there. But I've probably served on about five or six other, you know, commissions and boards in the city. And as I do now, when you're on city council, you land up serving on others.
Sure.
So, you know, I've really been, you know, connected into the business community because that's what I did for a living. I probably had over 300 businesses that I insured in Pueblo, a lot of nonprofits, you know, like the old Spanish Peaks Mental Health Centers, Colorado Blue Sky, the Housing Authority, both here in Colorado Springs. So I really had a lot of experience in risk management, and it was a great vantage point to kind of look at the economy and how the city was doing. And I had great people that I worked with, and I was very fortunate.
That's terrific. You have given back to the community your entire career, and interesting that your career path was kind of decided by you dropping your books.
Yeah, it was just happenstance. I mean, it's really funny how just something like that will happen. It'll change your life.
Oh,
you
sure.
I was very, very lucky.
Oh, great.
And I still, you know, even though both Ralph and I are retired, we still, you know, are very, very close. We both still serve on the Pueblo Urban Renewal Authority.
Okay.
And I still ask him questions on certain things because he's always been my go-to guy. His mentorship has meant a lot to me.
Oh, great. Well, the Pueblo City Council recently okayed three new subdivisions in Pueblo. So Pueblo's, we're trying to expand and attract new residents and new businesses. What can you tell us about those new subdivisions?
Yeah, there's you know, you have to start at the very top, and that is that we are really low in inventory as far as housing. Housing is really at a critical point in Pueblo right now. as far as, you know, being able to find a place to rent or, you know, or if you're a new couple and finding a house. And so, you know, that, in fact, when I ran this last time, you know, that was one area that I was really going to concentrate on, making sure that that we paid attention to housing. In fact, last year, you know, we probably built about 150 more houses than we did in 2020. So there's really an acceleration right now. And the one unusual thing last year was that Richmond Homes coming into Pueblo, because we never had a national builder that ever felt that they, you know, that they could do business in such a small, in their eyes, we were a small community.
Sure.
But we have, and the city has done a lot of things to kind of attract developments. I mean, you know, we've done some infrastructure things just to be able to incentivize some of these businesses, because a lot of these developments, we ask them to put in the infrastructure. And if there's a sewer line that has to be extended for 2 miles, you know, it was always on their dime. But we're at a point right now where the city, we have to kind of work in concert with these developers to make sure that, and also to keep the price down for, you know, for people. And we're very lucky in Pueblo that we can still build a house that people can afford. It's almost become unaffordable to buy a house in Denver and Colorado Springs anymore.
So true.
And so I think that a lot of the growth that we're seeing is that push with people thinking, well, you know, and if you work in the southern part of Colorado Springs, we've been an attractive alternative site for them to live. It's probably just as close from the northern part of Pueblo to the southern part of Springs as it is if you lived in Monument or the northern part of Colorado Springs and you
right.
work downtown.
Especially if you mix in the traffic element.
We haven't stopped. I mean, we're also looking at other developments that are still on the drawing board. And so you're going to see a lot more acceleration of housing. And of course, Pueblo West is also exploding. But sure. we're kind of in a situation where Pueblo West is really growing fast. We think some of that growth is going to spill over into Pueblo, and we're going to be more connected. You know, one of the things that we did on the western part of Pueblo, we're going to extend 18th Street. And then once they start the new jail off of Pueblo Boulevard, we're going to extend Joe Martinez Boulevard. It'll cut right into Pueblo Boulevard. So there will be another outlet from Pueblo West to Pueblo.
Oh, that'll help traffic getting to and from Pueblo West.
Yeah, right.
Big
and
time.
There's a development in that area that's been approved for 600 houses. And then over off of I-50, there's another development that's been approved for about 180 lots. So there's going to be a lot of push, you know, in that north west corner off of Highway 50, you know, between Pueblo West and Pueblo. So, but yeah, we have to, we're also changed some ordinances so that there could be more development in the center of town. And, you know, the Fuel and Iron building, which was the old Holmes Hardware building, you know, they're already framing up that building, and there's going to be 28 units there. There's another developer that's interested in building another condo units right there in the old parking lot of the old health department. You remember when they were located down on, I'm trying to think of the street, it would be Main and
right.
It's Ellen Hamill now where the SRDA is at.
Yes.
It makes a lot of sense for us to put more housing developments in the center of town because it does so many things. Number one, we don't have to rebuild the infrastructure. It's already there. Whereas if you go out to a piece of vacant land, you got to bring everything out there. So you got that. You've got young people that want that kind of lifestyle, and you want the retailers and the restaurants and everything to have more customers, and they're going to be right there walking right out of their condo right to utilizing their building.
Yeah, that's
so
perfect.
There's so many reasons why we need to do that, and you're going to see more developments downtown.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. And taking care of the infrastructure really makes it more attractive for builders as well.
Sure, it does because they're able to, if it's a rental apartment building or if it's even a condo or townhouse, it reduces the price of the house considerably when you don't have to bring in sewer lines and water lines and electrical utilities.
Sure.
So,
Oh, perfect. So on another subject, Posada recently purchased the Sunset Motel on Lake Avenue, and that's going to be for homeless and low-income individuals aged 55 and older. Homelessness has been a problem for a few years now in Pueblo. What is the city council focusing on to try and alleviate that problem?
we've done, during the last 4 years, it's really a tough issue, and it's not just a Pueblo issue; it's a Colorado national issue. But a couple of things that we did early on is that, I worked with a lady named Kathy Klein that works for the Pueblo Rescue Mission, and the city, in combination with the Pueblo Rescue Mission, we were able to get a grant from DOLA, and we were able to renovate and remodel the old Wayward Mission building down on 4th Street. And but during that time, we also had a warming shelter because we really had a cold winter. And so we do have a facility that will sleep about 100 people, and so that's been very, very active, but that's a contractual arrangement with the Pueblo Rescue Mission, and that's helped a little bit for those homeless people that need a place to sleep. And ironically, there's a lot of homeless people that do not want to go into a facility. It's just mind-boggling. It's just but getting back to Posada, I was their insurance agent. I worked with Posada for years. From the very beginning when they were created, I mean, I worked with Ann Stottleman and Kim Bowman too. And, they have done amazing things, for families. They have current rentals right now on a variety of locations that they've been able to garner grants and assistance. And so they've been able to have what's called transitional housing for families that might be in between jobs, or they just need a little bit of help. And so Posada has been a great organization, and
Absolutely.
ironically, the motel that's there right on a lake, and I believe it's Indiana, it's been vacant for a while, and I think the owner had passed away. In fact, I knew him. And what they're going to do, they're going to centralize like the kitchen area and centralize the washrooms and that kind of stuff, and there'll be just one bedroom apartments. But it's a need, especially for homeless veterans and homeless men that are really wanting to find a job and stuff. And so I think it's a great project for them. But these are little fixes as a community, and you see that there is such a need for not only mental health, but also trying to provide people that want to be trained for the workforce. It's just a sign of the times. I don't know. You would hope that there was a way of solving this. And, there are a lot of rules and laws that govern people's freedoms, and homeless people have a lot of freedoms that, you cannot abridge them. And so, it's a fine line in trying to, there's certain things that we can do, like they can't impede traffic. I'm looking at the potential of not impeding traffic in on sidewalks, where you can't get around them. And then the most important thing is probably how it affects the health of the community. But you still have, we have people that don't want to be helped. They just, I mean, it's just very ironic, and we worry a lot about them being out in the cold. And we certainly have changed some ordinances of the churches. In the old days, a church couldn't house the homeless because there were strict rules on how they could house people. The codes did not allow it. We've made some modifications so the churches can help on really cold nights. Created a couple of other warming shelters, you know.
Sure.
But as far as coming up with a solution and saying, God, we've got that magic bullet and we no longer will have homelessness in Pueblo, you know, it's all tied into mental health, poverty. You know, veterans might have a mental problem, or, you know, it's just a really hard thing to, you know, I think that we're doing the best we can managing it. Solving it is, you know, the tough part of it.
Definitely. It's very multifaceted. And like you said, there's not one single magic bullet to fix that.
That's true.
Well, the last couple of years across the country and in Pueblo as well, COVID-19 has certainly had a huge impact. How is Pueblo compared to other cities our size? How are we doing with that situation? And we're trying to come out of it with the Omicron virus.
You know, from helping the community, I think the city itself is, you know, we've done some remarkable things. But as far as the health of the community, and a lot of that has to do with the, you know, pre-existing conditions that people have. You know, we have an older population, which is a negative when it comes to the amount of people that have passed away in Pueblo County due to the coronavirus. As an example, if you get the death rate of El Paso County in comparison to Pueblo, their death rate was around 1,500 individuals. Probably less than that. It was in the 14, I think it was like 1450.
Mm-hmm.
Pueblo right now is at 700 deaths. El Paso is almost four times our size, but they have only double the amount of deaths that we do.
Wow.
So that means that, you know, I mean, we should be somewhere in the 350 in order to be equal with El Paso County.
Sure.
So the death rate during the first 2 years, we had to, it was not good. And, you know, we also had a lower vaccination rate, but we seem to have kind of weathered the storm. I mean, we're still seeing a lot of hospitalizations. We know that if you're vaccinated, your chances of dying are like much less. If you were to put 10 people in a hospital today and you had 10 deaths, 90% of those, or 9 out of the 10, are people that are not vaccinated.
That's right. Yeah.
And you'll have one death maybe who has been vaccinated, but there's also other medical conditions.
Sure.
So, but the city, we did everything we could, you know, putting the vaccination sites out at the mall. A lot of people took advantage of that. You know, we were able to utilize some of the federal dollars that we had to help defray the cost on a lot of this stuff. But one of the things that Pueblo did have that nobody else had in the state is that we have a pot of money called the half-cent sales tax that we collect to incentivize businesses. We provided 603 businesses with grants that were not to be paid back. These were just money that we wanted them to ride the storm here. So we gave 603 businesses close to $2.6 million in grants, as small as $2,000 to as high as $20,000. $20,000 was our cap.
Sure.
And
okay.
All of these businesses were very grateful that we did that because they were able to keep some of their key employees. And we lost very few businesses in Pueblo as a result of the coronaviruses. I'm sure we lost some, but not to the extent that other communities did because we were able to help them.
That grant money, that was really timed just right, I think, for a lot of businesses.
Oh, that was. And we also gave a lot of restaurants and bars parklets. And those are the little outdoor dining platforms that you see.
Mm-hmm.
And so we spent like I think it was like $350,000. We actually paid for them through the half-cent sales tax, and they did not have to pay it back. So that's a permanent business personal property that they keep. And I think it's worked out well for them, especially when there was a moratorium as to what your occupancy could be. It was different if you had an outdoor dining. So that really helped them kind of weather the storm.
Oh, sure.
And then we also lent money. We put another pot of money, about 1.6, for businesses that really needed significant capital and could not get it. So we lent about 34 businesses in town, loans anywhere from like 25,000 to 50, I think 75, so that they could do something that was significant to save their businesses. It might have been a drive-up window, or they needed something to, you know, protect their employees in the interior, all of that kind of stuff. Not many cities had to have some sales tax, and we had the ability to modify it to help our businesses. And we're quite proud of that we were able to do that. I'm trying to get a report right now as to how many businesses we really did lose. And, you know, we're always losing businesses anyway. Forget about COVID. You know,
right. People didn't, right.
They go into business and then realize it's not for them. So, but it would be interesting to contrast that.
Sure.
To contrast that with what's happened in the past. I think we were pretty good at saving a lot of businesses.
Definitely. I suspect we're on the low end, and that grant money and loans actually were a big reason for that, I think.
I think it helped a lot.
Definitely.
We a lot of our businesses really appreciated it too. So,
well, many people have hopefully seen the Gateway Project on the north end of town. The second sculpture is slated to be installed in March of this year. Just a gorgeous architecture.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Ken Williams continues to amaze people as to how he fires all those bricks and stuff and makes those beautiful sculptures, I call them. And, yeah, we had enough money to put the first one up. And then we've been fundraising for the last couple of years. And there was a gentleman that worked for the city. He's retired now, but he continued helping, you know, raise the money. I was trying to think of his name. I'm really getting bad with names. Anyway, I wanted to give him credit. We have to give this gentleman credit for, you know, just being dogged about getting the funds in order to get the second one up.
I know Bill Zwick and Steve Naraki.
Bill Zwick. And then the gateway to the Southwest was really Steve Naraki's idea, the name or the slogan, I guess. So yeah, I'm glad you brought up Mr. Zwick, because he deserves a lot of the credit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's really a great entrance, and you know that whole area just keeps growing up there.
It really does. And the goal, as I understand it, is to make Pueblo not something you just drive through, but a destination. How do we do that? How do we track the folks who are driving from Fort Collins and Denver and Colorado Springs through Pueblo and coming up from the south from Albuquerque and Santa Fe? How do we get them to take that off ramp and see Pueblo?
Imagine that Pueblo is on the crossroads of Highway 50 and I-25. I always kid with people about I call it the Cracker Barrel approach to tourism. I love going to the Cracker Barrel, by the way.
Right.
So anyway, I'm always amazed if the next time you're up there, look at the license plates. I mean, they're from Texas, they're from Oklahoma, New Mexico, Nebraska. In other words, number one, they're right off the highway. Number two, they've got that beautiful little shopping area, and then they got the corner with all the toys. So,
right. Yeah.
And then the guy that's driving or the gal, they're exhausted, so they want to eat, and the kids want to see the toys, and the lady wants to see all the pretty stuff they have to sell. We have so many amenities in Pueblo, and the people that do come off and they look, and they're able to see what we have, they're amazed, and they're amazed because they don't expect Pueblo to have the amenities that we do. The Art Center is part of that. In fact, the Art Center is going to have this Da Vinci exhibit. I think it's going up in June. And he expects literally hundreds of people from the north coming down to see this. It's going to be so unique. But we also have a new visitor center at the convention center. So our convention right now was expanded, the last 4 years.
Yes.
And we can accommodate so many small conventions now. We've opened up the new parking structure, and one of the amenities at any convention is that there's be no charge to use the parking structure, and it's right across the street. The Pueblo Chamber has opened up their visitor center right in the new exhibit halls. The Chamber's doing a good job of keeping a record of people, and they really were on a roll until COVID hit us. We're getting ready for another phase of the Riverwalk because we were able to acquire some of the land that we needed from Ferguson, the Ferguson building. And we have on the drawing board a new boathouse. And hopefully within the 4 years that I'm serving, we're able to at least get started on the new aquatic center that will be built right there off of Santa Fe, where the extension of the Riverwalk is going to go.
Okay, very nice.
So we have a lot of things that are happening, but I've always felt that we need kind of a tourist magnet, something that would make people stop. And I know that we have the Riverwalk, and we've renovated Memorial Hall. We've got a nice arena. We've got a lot of amenities downtown, and we're hoping that we can do more of that. The Pueblo Chamber has also hired a lady that she does nothing but try to book conventions. And I think that's the kind of thing that, once this COVID's behind us, I think it's really going to accelerate not only conventions, but tourism. Pueblo's never been considered a tourist town, but I think people are starting to discover us. You know, Memorial Hall is every bit as nice as anything on Broadway.
It really is. Absolutely.
And my daughter was a figure skater years ago, and so my wife was involved with the Pueblo Figure Skating Club. We have probably the second nicest ice arena in Colorado. The one in Vail is really beautiful. Pueblo has a beautiful ice arena.
Definitely.
And, yeah. In fact, one night I was, I had nothing to do, and I listed the 9 cities that are between 110 and 130,000 population. You know, places like Centennial, Wheat Ridge, Englewood, the populations, and most of those cities that are 120, they're bedroom communities to Denver.
Sure.
But none of those 9 cities have the amenities that Pueblo does at 120,000 population. We have 2 hospitals. We have a university, a community college, a racetrack that everybody wants to come down from Colorado Springs. We have the ice arena, and you have people from Springs come to our ice arena because ice time is very expensive. You know, we have Memorial Hall. We have the Riverwalk. We have an airport that will land any size aircraft. We're very unique because none of these other 120,000 populated cities in Colorado even come close to the amenities that we have. The lake, the lake is another
right
huge thing.
That reservoir draws a lot of folks in. Absolutely.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
I'm talking with Dennis Flores, city councilman, now in his second term. Let me ask one final question about attracting new businesses and industry to Pueblo. What does the future look like for that? What are our plans right now to attract those larger companies that have, the higher paid employees that we could locate here?
That's one area that I've been intimately involved with. And all I can say is that we are open for business in Pueblo, Colorado. And one of the, I had mentioned to you that city council people also have an obligation to serve on certain boards. And one of the boards that I serve on is the Pueblo Urban Renewal Authority. We've been working on this project for a couple of years, and that was the project to build the long rail mill at Avarez Steel. And, that was all finalized last year.
Yes.
And you can see the construction of the new mill. But we utilized not only the half-cent sales tax and state incentives, but we also use what's called tax increment financing. And so we went all out and issued bonds in the amount of $93 million to incentivize Abrez to stay in Pueblo and build their plant here. Our plant is so unique because it not only will be manufacturing a 320 foot rail, it will be only one of three in the world that's doing this.
Wow.
And then we'll be the only rail mill or mill that will use solar in powering this plant. And that's also a unique thing, you know. And so we're getting a reputation about, you know, using alternative energy. But the reason that I bring that specific thing is that there was a good chance that if we hadn't saved the rail mill, that maybe they would have closed the rest of the mill. So I kind of feel like we saved 1,000 jobs at the mill, not only the 200 or 300 they're going to need in this rail mill, but, you know, the other departments, and there's quite a few departments out there. But we are currently working on a lot of leads and incentives. I mean, we've brought many, many great companies that are doing so well here. The GCC, concrete place, the Vestas, which has transferred ownership to a Korean company,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to be expanding. It's very vital that we continue finding high paying jobs. That's why the housing issue is so important, is that we've got a lot of jobs that are coming into Pueblo, and those jobs, those people that are moving in, you know, into Pueblo, they need a place to live. We've got to deal with this housing issue in concert with, you know, the development of bringing in new companies and new employees. Just a little side note, mm-hmm. one of the projects that I worked on last year that was included in our budget is that I have developed what's called a Pueblo County Economic Dashboard. And it's very similar to what Boulder has right now in Fort Collins and even El Paso County, and I think Grand Junction. And I've developed a partnership with a economics professor that is now going to be providing a monthly economic dashboard that's going to provide the community with real live current data every month about, you know, vacancies on apartments, you know, median housing prices, businesses that are thinking about maybe building a second location. There'll be real-time data that's going to help us not only manage the city better, but also provide information to business people that want to invest in our community.
Oh, and, very good.
It's going to be a really important document that people will be able to have every month. I think you may know this lady. She's a Professor Bailey, and she's at UCCS. In fact, she has a report on, she does it for El Paso County, and she's going to start doing that for us here in Pueblo County. So,
oh, very good.
And lastly, I just want to say this. We have 5,000 jobs available in Pueblo. We're disconnected between training people and training them in the right areas where the jobs are at. There's a critical crisis of people finding people to work. I mean, we have 62 vacancies in Pueblo alone, in city of Pueblo. And you talk to everybody, everybody's looking. I had lunch with an attorney today. He cannot find anybody to do all the legal documents.
Sure.
He was just pulling his hair. He says, I can't find anybody. We got to start working on training people into the jobs that are going to be available in the future. That's going to be part of this dashboard. It's called Workforce Development Strategies.
Oh, very good. Well, it sounds like Pueblo has a bright future.
I love Pueblo. We'll always love it. I'm happy that I'm going to be able to represent Pueblo and try to help the community. And there is so many good things that are going on right now that I can't even describe all of them. There's a lot of opportunity to do a lot of good things for Pueblo this next year.
Absolutely. I've been talking with City Councilman Dennis Flores. And Dennis, your first 4 years were great. We're looking forward to your second 4 years. And I have one question that's not, it's more of a personality question, I guess. What comes on your perfect pizza?
On my perfect pizza?
Yes.
Well, I can tell you which one it is. It's the Musso pizza, and it's green chili.
Okay. All right. Very good.
That's it.
All right. Dennis, thank you very much. I really appreciate you spending time with us. And
any time, David. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm really glad that the community's getting as much information as they can. And,
absolutely.
And doing this is really, what an asset to have this podcast.
Thank you.
To let the citizens get to know their elected officials too. So thank you.
Sure thing. Absolutely. That's Pueblo's Podcast. I'm Dave Moore. Be proud, Pueblo.